Welcome back to Teaching Matters, the University of Edinburgh's hub for discussing, promoting, and showcasing teaching and learning across the university. We're a website, blog, podcast, and most importantly, a small group of people passionate about providing platforms for conversations surrounding teaching and learning. I'm Sylvia, second-year PhD student and an intern at Teaching Matters, and I'll be walking you through this presentation. Today's episode comes from a storytelling session presented at the Learning and Teaching Conference by Dr. Neil Spears, Widening Participation Manager at the University of Edinburgh. Now let's hear Widening Participation Officer Gabriel giving an intro to this talk.
A lot of the narration is based on conversation and quotes that we've had with working class students from widening participation backgrounds this academic year, as well as in previous years, and all done anonymously for this presentation.
Quite often, we hear about the challenging lived experiences of working class students. Neil presents this podcast through a storytelling format to replicate the way that students first share their experiences. Some of the things that you might hear now might be emotionally challenging for some listeners. This talk also highlights good practice examples of amazing staff who continue to make university a kinder place to thrive and grow. The title of his presentation goes like this. I sat, a solitary student, in a crowded university classroom. An open book, an empty cup, on the marble tabletop. Here comes chapter one. Getting there.
The alarm cuts through the sleepy silence each morning. I'm checking the trains are running and there's no cancellations, or I'm hoping the bus won't be late or the traffic slow me down. Getting ready is not as easy as 1, 2, 3. I need to make breakfast for my gran and make sure she's okay. In another town, a mother gets her child ready to take to the breakfast club at school, kissing her goodbye before taking the bus to Edinburgh. There's so much to do just to get there. Sometimes I can be late. Train cancelled, bus caught in traffic. My child wasn't feeling so well this morning. I left as early as I could, but it still caught me out. Sometimes life just rises and falls around me. Whereas for some, they rise refreshed from sleep and fall into their ensuite bathroom and make the short walk, fully breakfasted, to campus. I know it's not easy for a university like Edinburgh to understand a student like me.
Chapter 2. Class.
I stood outside the classroom door to welcome arriving students who were gathering to reflect on campus experience. What is daily life like at university? We sat down with tea or coffee in hand and began. Some personal tutors would rather defend the issues that you bring up rather than solve them. And I don't think that's really what you want. If someone's come up with a problem, the best thing is to deal with that problem rather than to say why it isn't a problem. I think there's so many assumptions about the confidence it takes to even write an email saying, I don't know what's going on here, or I'm feeling a bit wobbly. Social class matters on campus. See, I'm not scared that others would say something to me about it. It's just that I don't want to be there, you know, so there's a chance of them saying something to me, something ignorant, something like that. I'm just kind of on the sidelines, just watching from the outside. I know social class matters on campus. I see the divide every day. There's this fear that, oh no, I'll say something stupid, or they might be aware of my accent. Or maybe I just don't know enough about something. So there's always this kind of running. Like all the insecurities are bubbling up inside me in this scary situation. I don't come from a family where people went to university, so I've not sat around the dinner table where, you know, people talk about that stuff. you just try and get through as best you can. You already feel that you've got a red light on top of your head. So you don't want to highlight yourself more as somebody who is like that and not managing things, you know, the usual. You don't sound right. You don't look right. The same with age. I've definitely been treated differently because of that. I've had a few incidences where people hold doors open for me because they think I'm the tutor. Equally, there's people not wanting to speak to me, or even worse, just avoiding. I don't know quite the exact right timings or the exact right introductory words or have the little codes. They're sort of like little secrets that pass between people, which demonstrate that you know certain things about language, about class, about knowledge, about hierarchies. Sometimes those things make me feel small. And then other times, I think I'm also liberated from all the trappings that come with those things too. I would never say I feel like I belong to the University of Edinburgh. Never in a million years, no. I'm kind of hyper-aware of class on campus. I'm learning about these social policies, and everything that we have, you know, learned about has affected my life in the past, whereas the other students who are kind of just learning for the first time about it take it at face value. They haven't really experienced the effects of this stuff, so they just kind of accept it. And now I kind of get irritated when they just accept it because it's just going to all reproduce itself. Generally, I feel like, you know, the university doesn't seem like the most caring establishment. It just like sometimes it seems like this money-making, student-churning establishment. Individuals from more privileged backgrounds will often have already covered the content, and they're finding it really easy. And then they'll turn around to people like me and be like, oh, don't you know this? You should know this. I think you should know this. How come you don't know this? And I think I really react badly to that. I get really stressed. And there's a lot of people trying to show off. They're creating a competition when there isn't one. Quite frustrating to see that there's no sort of understanding between staff and students. Many staff already themselves from higher socioeconomic classes. And so certain issues that students bring up, it's not something that they can sort of relate to. And so they're having to try to understand why you might feel a certain way or need to do a certain thing. You know, it's really difficult. Class is a very kind of noticeable thing. You know, as an institution, Edinburgh's kind of renowned for it. You know, I think it does attract a certain type of person. When we're going on a small field trip, we all met for the first time and I said hello to people. And they just looked at me, up and down. And I just walked over to another few people from the group. And I had definitely sensed this feeling of unwelcomeness. And then as the field trip went on, it became very clear that there was kind of divisions among the group. And you could see that it comes maybe down to dialect or accent. And then you start looking a bit deeper and you see it's classism. So I had one student asking me because I said I work part-time and she said, why don't your parents just help you financially? And some of the other students that I work with, they sometimes feel like me a little bit ashamed of the fact that they have to work instead of their parents helping them. You know, their families can't help. It's not that they don't want. Students that seem very bright who have never really had to work for anything, who have sailed through school, have never had any personal issues or everything. They've had everything rosy in their garden. They've never had a life event that's ever put them off track whatsoever. Those students are very good at rolling their eyes, being very dismissive, the minute I try to speak. In tutorials last year, I don't know if the tutor realized it or not, there was a person in my group, and they had been in care for most of their lives, and they are an incredibly intelligent, brilliant person. And every time he said something, the clique of 18-year-old girls would start nudging each other and giggling and rolling their eyes. And I don't know if the person realized this. I hope they didn't, but I knew. You know, I'm a council house kid who recognized it all too well. People are looked down upon because they're care experienced, or just because they so happen to come from a poorer background. It's like going back to school, isn't it? You know, if you haven't got the right bag or the right trainers, well, then you're not welcome. 2 months ago, I was in the cafeteria in the library. I got really cross. It was a group of three guys, really well-spoken, very well-dressed, and really expensive sports gear. And they were discussing, I think it was a rugby game from the weekend, and how they got away with not paying for something. I just found it really sad. But it was the way they were talking down and disrespecting the young woman that was working in the cafe. So patronizing to her. And I've seen it a lot. My sister has a similar job as the young woman who was working there, but she works at another different university cafe, and it made me think of her. Hope she's not treated that way. I know I study here, but I don't see myself as part of Edinburgh University. It's such a daunting prospect to say that you are a student at the University of Edinburgh and all that entails. You know, and I realized that I just missed out on so many opportunities to meet people and to make friends and just all the university experience because I was too insecure. You sometimes feel very alone if you don't fit into the box. And I think I feel like everyone around me has some sort of secret guidebook on what they're doing. I'd say I'm more angry now in my senior years because when I was early on as a student, I just felt like I had a really bad imposter syndrome. So I didn't feel like I had the right to be angry. I didn't think I had the right to be here. So who was I to get angry at somebody who was letting me in? But I think now I'm more confident in my place here and I feel more righteous in my anger. All that I lost or didn't have the chance to grab hold of. Gone forever. When we were in school, we were all in poverty, you know, and we all kind of supported each other. But when you come to this university where it feels like 90% of the students are all from rich backgrounds, when you don't have certain privileges, you know, you notice it more and you're like, oh, I've never been on holiday before. You say that and you can just feel the shift in the room. They're literally never experienced it and they don't want to know. You know, doesn't it feel very nice when you don't feel like my best friend, the things that she's dealt with. If I was her, if I'd gone through everything she had gone through to get to uni and then get treated the way she's treated while studying her degree by other students, I think I would have dropped out. They're so individualistic. And there's been times when she's asked for help for them and they've deliberately given her like the wrong answer on purpose. So she stands out. She's scrambling for stuff, and they just speak to her like she's nothing. You know, sometimes I just feel so, so lonely. When you're someone that society doesn't necessarily like, it's hurtful. Certain things do make you, you know, really want to cry, but most of the time it's just like, this is my reality. I guess it's quite demoralizing to have been pushed into a state of defeat. You know, the racist microaggressions are just normal. I don't think I'll ever be able to escape these. I know other people have experienced outwardly racist comments, but luckily I haven't yet. And I've met a few great people. Like me, they don't come from the greatest of circumstances. I remember in first year telling people that I didn't live in halls. And they were saying, I can't believe that you choose not to stay in halls, you know, at Pollock, especially when there's somewhere like Chancellor's Court. And I hear them say, she's worn that dress on the night out before. Like, did you notice that? Or when my friend's laptop broke and she was really upset, she couldn't afford to get a new one. And everyone was like, oh, just call your mum to buy a new one. What's the big deal? And I just couldn't understand. University is full of people who are very much in a bubble. Yeah, I've had people say, oh, that's a weird name that you've got. Or do you speak other languages? Why is your food so spicy? Do you have drinking water at home? We did a survey in one of our tutorials, and it was about whether people that are not responsible for their illnesses should be prioritized over people that are responsible. Well, I think it's just essentially demonizing the working class, but the vast majority of the tutorial group agreed about the prioritization. I just think it's so backwards. I was shocked. I thought it was so naive. The fact that people are still kind of believing in this classist capitalist dogma. I think it's just completely surreal. Sometimes my day just involves me being ridiculed and feeling sad. You spend a lot of time trying to avoid certain circumstances and conversations, but someone said to me, oh yeah, my mom used to do finance, but now she's a yoga instructor and my dad lectures. What about your family? In first year, I couldn't have answered that. But at this stage, I was in fourth year and I said, my mom works in a cake factory and I don't know my dad. I was mad that I had to reveal that about me. It's strange because there's all these complaints about the course content, but I would go into the classes and I was like, this is amazing. This is literally the best thing I've ever done in my life. I'm so happy. The lecturer is talking about these really cool things. I'm so fortunate to be here. It's my first day at uni, and I was so nervous, and my mom and dad had been encouraging me about the first day to know that I've worked so hard to get here, like everybody else. You know, no one in our family has ever been to uni before, so they were so, so proud of me and excited for me. And it was my 9 a.m. first lecture, and I think there was like about 350 people there, but, you know, I sat at the back. And the lecturer came in, and I was thinking to myself, okay, this is it. And the first thing he said was, hands up all those whose parents haven't been to university before. And my stomach just dropped. I didn't know where to look. So I put my head down and I thought, I've been found out. I met my project supervisor and I thought it was going really well. I had my methodology all worked out and my reading, you know, like a full schedule. And the meeting was going really well, I thought. And then my supervisor leaned over in her seat and she said to me that she could see I was a rough diamond, but not to worry that she would sort me out. I mean, I've been bullied because of my working class accent. It happens in my tutorials. You know, a general sense of comments and attitudes. And it's been going on for ages. Sometimes I can get really upset and I don't want to go back to the tutorial next week. So I told my school all about this. And they said that if I feel that way, that I don't need to go back to class and I won't lose any attendance marks. You know, the university supposes its students are 18 years old, middle class, with a heap of cash to support them. Many of us just don't fit into what the university is catering for. You know, the university classifies people as outsiders very quickly. If you don't stand up for yourself, you're walked over. I've been walked over my entire life, looked down upon, a joke. Only by standing up to what we face can we change it. A large number of our students are not interested in the greater good. They won't be global citizens. They're only interested in how much is in their trust funds. I had romantically imagined there would be great discussions and passionate people engaged in social activism, and it's not at all. It's just a homogenous group of people going through the motions. And the university is fine with it. It pays the bills. But we're perpetuating social divisions in the way we work. It's not a problem of the university alone, it's society. I'm about to graduate, and I don't have a job or internship lined up yet. But I'm a good student. And you hear people talking about family connections and how the job is waiting for them or a friend of the family has set something up. I even heard a few people talk about how the job was all set up before they even started university. The last 4 years was just an experience for them. The job was waiting all along. I just don't know that world. Once again, time had defeated it.
Chapter 3, Solidarity.
After the students had left the classroom, I myself was left with my own thoughts and reminded that there are sometimes those in the academic field that provide us with a language to describe what we've always known, always seen, or always experienced. For me, two such individuals are Paulo Freire and Pierre Bourdieu. And after a discursive session like the one just finished, I'm continually reminded of particular things they've said or written. And on this particular afternoon, I was reminded of how Diane Rae writes about how Bourdieu views the dispositions which make up habitus as the products of opportunities and constraints framing the individual's earlier life experience. As a result, the most improbable practices are rejected as unthinkable. I can hear our student voices and see the improbable and the unthinkable. Our work in wedding participation involves changing what is seen as the improbable and unthinkable. If we don't do it, as Bourdieu asserts, why might a student attempt to achieve what is already denied? Our work is filled with a Freirean sense of love, of hope, and of solidarity. It has to be, because as Bourdieu and Wacom tell us, when habitus encounters a social world of which it is the product, it is like a fish in water. It does not feel the weight of the water, and it takes the world about itself for granted. That Freirean spirit must stand with our working class students so they are not overwhelmed by the weight of the water in a social world that they are not the product of. I know many staff that support students with Freirean acts of kindness and gentleness. Let me tell you about the staff member I know that buys us food shopping every month for one of their tutees, or the staff member that provides extra tutorial support for an hour every week over Teams for a couple of their tutees. The staff member that gives a new copy of one of the recommended texts to some of their tutees every single year. Or the staff member that met with one of their students every 2 weeks for the entire academic year to make sure they were able to manage all that life was throwing at them. There are more stories, acts of solidarity. Surely this is the way to live. To reject the culture of indifference that is devouring us. As the late Bell Hooks wrote, education is the practice of freedom should enable students to move beyond boundaries and to transgress.
Chapter 4, Home Time.
And so it's time to go home. I'm again to check the trains are running and there's no cancellations. Or I'm hoping the bus won't be late. Or the traffic slow me down. I've got to get home and then back out straight away for my evening shift of work. I need to make my gran her dinner and get her ready for bed. I've got to collect my daughter from after school and then get dinner on. Getting ready is not as easy as 1, 2, 3. It's not always an evening of dinner at a restaurant, on a trip to the cinema, and off to a club after stepping from bar to bar. What I know is that what we do, with and for and through our students, is valued and remembered. Although we may never know it or hear them say it, it is appreciated and cherished. Which reminds me of the letter that Albert Camus wrote after winning the Nobel Prize for Literature. Now, we may not have students that will win Nobel, that be Nobel laureates, that will write us thank you letters. But in its gentleness, this letter should remind us of the value of what we do and why we do it. 19th of November, 1957. Dear Monsieur Germain, I let the commotion around me these days subside a bit before speaking to you from the bottom of my heart. I have just been given far too great an honour, one I neither sought nor solicited. But when I heard the news, my first thought, after my mother, was of you. Without you, without the affectionate hand you extended to the small, poor child that I was, without your teaching and example, none of this would have happened. I don't make too much of this sort of honour, but at least it gives me the opportunity to tell you what you have been and still are for me, and to assure you of the efforts, your work, and the generous heart you put into still lives on in one of your little schoolboys, who despite the years has never stopped being your grateful pupil. I embrace you with all my heart. Albert Camus.
Being a working class student myself, I can very well relate to these voices. I'm thankful to all the staff at the university who make this place a kinder place to learn and grow. Neil concludes this podcast with a reminder to the staff at the university. What we do with and for our students is valued and remembered by them. We hope that this realization can remind us as staff of the value of what we do and why we do it. Thank you, Neil and Gabriel, for this podcast. And thank you for listening to this episode of Teaching Matters. Teaching Matters is brought to you by the University of Edinburgh's Institute of Academic Development. For more posts and conversations about teaching and learning, head to our blog. We'd be delighted for you to join these conversations. Do so, just email us, teachingmatters@ed.ac.uk. You can also find us on Twitter. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider following us on Spotify or subscribing on Apple Podcasts. I'm leaving the 5-star. Music for this episode was provided by Cook Sounds. In the meantime, stay curious.